Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to the special bonus episode of the Irish Economics Podcast. On today's episode, I'm joined by Linda Tunstrom and Stephen Newbold, who are assistant professors at the University of Wyoming. Along with their co-authors, they produced a very interesting paper quantifying the costs of social distancing and comparing it to the benefits. Given the rapid turnaround time, Stephen and Linda produced a fairly robust argument in favour of social distancing, so provides an evidence base to reassure us that even the hard-nosed economists agree that this is the correct course of action to take. So Linda and Stephen, it's great to have you both on the podcast. I hope you're both keeping safe and well during the lockdown. So the first thing maybe we could consider is just the general topic and the headline message of the paper in terms of social distancing. A lot of media messages were perhaps saying that we could be overreacting when it comes to social distancing, imposing economic costs that perhaps might outweigh the benefits, but your paper would suggest that these economic costs are entirely justified. Would that be correct?
Your opening remarks about people questioning whether or not our reaction to this outbreak is an overreaction or not. That was the main sort of motivation for doing this study as quickly as we could. And we wanted to find out just that. Is it plausible or likely one way or the other that measures that are coming online now in the U.S. and elsewhere are going to be worth the economic pain that is also going to come along with those measures? And so, the way we set about trying to answer that question is to set up as straightforward a model as possible that has, the key ingredients to this, and those include the value of the lives that we expect to save through these measures and the value of the lost GDP.
Okay, so it's a straightforward cost-benefit analysis, I suppose, where you compare the hard economics of the losses in GDP and maybe the statistical losses of the value of a life, which considers maybe the economic implications of the deaths associated with the outbreak, but before we even consider maybe the moral or social impacts, there is a strong economic argument that we should be social distancing. So would that be correct?
That's right. We ran a number of scenarios, but we tried to, frame everything around a middle of the road scenario, which takes, the most plausible values for all the important assumptions that go into this benefit cost analysis, and run that all the way through and compare, right, the value of the lives saved, and we might talk about how we value those lives in a moment, with the lost GDP, which is what we're thinking of as the cost side in this benefit cost analysis. But our middle of the road scenario gives us, something on the order of $5 trillion in net benefits. That's the difference between the value of the lives that are lost in the controlled scenario versus the uncontrolled scenario, compared to, our central benchmark scenario for the difference between the GDP loss discounted back to the present in those two scenarios.
So maybe we could go into the modeling. So
Could you tell us a bit about how you, just the general framework, the modeling framework you went to maybe come to calculate these numbers?
Sure. Yeah, it's got a couple of two key parts. The first one is the model of infections and deaths resulting from infections over time. And for that part of the analysis, we used a textbook model that tracks the number of susceptible individuals, infected individuals, and recovered individuals over time as the, you know, as the virus spreads through a population. And so that model, sort of two key inputs of that model is a parameter that we call the contact rate. This is, you know, sort of measures how frequently people run into each other and provide opportunities to spread the virus between someone who's currently infected and someone who isn't. And the mortality rate, once someone's infected, what's the likelihood that they will not survive the infection? So those are among the parameters that we had to specify to run this model. And those came from, you know, that's based on our best read of the current literature that's, right, you know, coming out rapidly on.
Sure. So the average infection rate and maybe the average rate that you pass on the infection to those around you.
Right.
Okay. And then you were able to calculate mortality rates from that, presumably.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah, we're also using mortality rates conditional on being affected. And there's two important mortality rates there. We've one important aspect of the model is this assumption about what's the capacity of our healthcare system to take care of people who are infected as they become infected. One of the big concerns is that we're going to overwhelm the healthcare system and have too many people go into the hospital at one time. So not everyone can get the full, you know, standard of care we're used to. Your listeners are familiar with, you know, concerns about running out of, not having enough capacity in terms of ventilators, beds in the hospitals. And so part of the model involves, you know, estimating what the elevated mortality rate would be. So that's another important ingredient. And for both of those mortality rates, again, we're trying to, you know, pick the most middle of the road estimates we can discern from the literature that's come out on this so
sure.
far.
So it's, I suppose to clarify, of course, it's a US, it's a US case study, and you would take into account, I suppose, the average capacity. Would that be right in the US, and then, or maybe the aggregate capacity, and then just compare the need with the capacity at any one time. Would that be right?
That's right. Right. Yeah, it's based. It is. The idea is. It's very aggregate. Capacity sort of threshold that's in the model. The model is, you know, basically treats the entire U.S. population as a single aggregate, and so the number of infections that we're projecting over time is the number in the entire country. So this contact rate is some kind of average across the entire country, and the healthcare system capacity is also, you know, a nationwide
sure
quantity that's in the
model. So that would perhaps give you a best case scenario, in the sense that it doesn't take into account maybe inequality of opportunity, that some regions might be better served than others and some sections of society may be better served than others. So if you take that into account, perhaps it could be an even greater cost. Would that be correct?
It could be. It doesn't account for differences over space. So, you know, this is we're thinking of it as an average over the entire country, but certainly it's going to be the case that places are going to be worse than others.
But then I suppose the other aspect is GDP and how it affects maybe the macroeconomy. Could you tell us something about how you calculate those estimates?
We can. Linda, do you want to take this one?
Well, sure. So again, you know, like we did with benefits or with life saved, you know, we're looking at the country average. So all your concerns that apply to taking the average that, you know, some regions might be worse affected than others would apply to the GDP as well. But, you know, basically what we did is we pulled numbers from, you know, the best, our best read of the literature also there. You know, people have much greater resources at doing macroeconomic forecasts than we would have. So we just pulled those numbers. Goldman Sachs recently came out. So on March 20th, Goldman Sachs came out with a forecast of the U.S. economy a couple of years ahead that includes social distancing or the effect of social distancing as well. And there's another study that came out a little earlier this year that forecasted the economic consequences of the pandemic for the U.S. under, you know, a range of different scenarios, but that did not entail social distancing. So we could use those numbers to you know, get an idea of what the GDP drop might be if we did nothing or if we didn't implement social distancing, and what they might be if we do. And then we had to make some assumption as well about the recovery rate of the economy. So, you know, both the sort of initial drop, which would be, you know, the numbers that we pulled them from those studies. And then we needed to think about, all right, how long will it take for the economy to recover? And so we need to make assumptions about that too. And there we looked at the average recovery rate for bear markets. That since, I think 1835, there was a study, and that ended up being 6 years. So that's where we applied for that. We you know, played around with different numbers. The recovery rate seemed to be a little quicker after the Spanish flu, for instance, in the U.S. The beginning of 1918. And that if we used the recovery period there, then our forecast would have been a little more optimistic than it is right now. So even higher net benefits and net social benefits than we came up with. But we tried to be fairly conservative in, you know, most of the assumptions that we did for the economy, just to you know, to see sort of, well, get a more conservative estimate, I guess, of what the net benefits might be.
Sure. Okay. So very much a conservative account of how the economy might recover, and you said 60 months in terms of
right
what the recovery rate would be. And that was what you found in for the Spanish flu. So that's quite a.
No, that was not for the Spanish flu.
Oh,
that was the bear market's recovery rate. Yeah,
right.
But we also looked at the Spanish flu, which was a little bit of a shorter recovery rate. But
okay. So that's basically the time it takes to get back to the trajectory you would have been on beforehand. Is that correct?
Right.
Okay.
That's correct.
Sure. Okay. So when you compare these two, you said it gives a net benefit of $5 trillion U.S. dollars. To put that into account, I sent you on just a general headline figure, which would be 25% of U.S. GDP, which is quite a substantial amount of money compared to maybe, say, Trump's stimulus package of something like 10% of GDP. So, given the sort of impacts.
I like those numbers.
Pardon?
Yeah. I like the comparison that you did that. I thought that was.
Okay. Well, sure. Well, feel free to use it in your favor. just to put into account, because I hear a lot of people talking about the impacts, and we see these impacts of 10% GDP. And I know in the UK, the stimulus is 15%. Here in Ireland, or in the Republic of Ireland, there's a 2.2% of GNI stars, the preferred measure of the economy. But it's. With more due to come, and it's expected that sort of stimulus will be around the 15% mark. But I suppose the take-home message I would take there is that this is a huge, like there is already huge money being pumped into the economy to recover from this. And this cost could hurt an awful lot more unless we take the appropriate response.
Very true. And also, you know, it's worth remembering too that regardless of what happens here, you know, the social distancing itself is not what pushes us into recession. It might push us into a deeper, at least temporarily deeper recession. But we would most likely enter a recession either way, which would mean that we would most likely, you know, aim for economic stimulus either way. Maybe not of this magnitude, but there are also studies. There is a recent study that came out also a few days ago that shows that in during the Spanish flu, it seemed like cities in the U.S. who had implemented social distancing earlier also recovered faster after the pandemic. So, you know, I think it's really interesting to make these comparisons and looking at the stimulus packages and you know, the trillions of dollars that they might also entail. But we wouldn't be without that, even if we didn't have social distancing.
Yeah. No, I fully agree. I know you had a sensitivity analysis then in terms of different break-even points. Could you maybe explain what that analysis maybe might tell us?
Yeah. So what we did there, well, we did, a bunch of different things. I mean, first of all, we know that, you know, the sensitivity analysis was really important to our study because there is so much uncertainty surrounding a lot of the numbers that we have in the analysis. I mean, we're in an early stage still, at least when it comes to data collection, you know, of the pandemic. It's going to take us years until we know the full impact, both on the economy and on public health from this pandemic. So, but that doesn't really help when we're going to make policy decisions, when we're going to decide on whether or not we should implement social distancing. You know, this is the time that we need to do that, or ideally maybe even earlier. So we need to make our best sort of guesstimate on whether or not it's worth it. So we knew that there was a lot of uncertainty surrounding, you know, some of the parameters or a multitude of parameters that we're using. So the sensitivity analysis was really important. So then, you know, what we're doing is, what Steve so phenomenally did was, you know, to try to push the results in the different direction. You know, what happens? How far can we push all these numbers before our result will flip? So that is what the sensitivity analysis does. It varies, one by one, the parameter values, and sees, you know, how low or how high can they go before we flip our results.
Right. Okay. And is there any maybe headline results that you found that would be perhaps of greatest interest when it comes to making policy decisions?
The two that jump out at me are the value of statistical life that we use in the model. We use a very standard number for that parameter. It's one that's recommended by U.S. federal government agencies for official benefit cost analyses of government regulations. So I feel pretty good about that number, but there is study. You know, people are still studying the heterogeneity of the value of statistical life over the age, over the life cycle at different ages. So that's a still ongoing area of study. And there's some, you know, so there's some studies that suggest the BSL goes down later in life. Some suggest the opposite. There's different sort of estimated schedule, BSL schedules over the life cycle. So we definitely wanted to test the sensitivity of the results to that parameter. And that's one, I'm not even looking at it, but I think the break-even number is somewhere around $5 million. So that's an important dimension for the sensitivity analysis. And the other one that I think is important is this speed to time to recovery for the economy. So it is possible. And the point of all of these is, you know, to recognize that it is possible to get the opposite result, right? If the parameters, if things work out in a certain way, we could end up, you know, sort of over controlling. If the, you know, if it turns out the mortality rates are much lower than we believe at this time, and yet we still, you know, impose severe and prolonged social distancing, we could end up with a GDP loss in present value terms that's greater than the value of life saved, right? So that was the whole point of this exercise, and we wanted to find out sort of how big is the space within which our main result holds qualitatively, at least. So we're trying to trace out the edges of that with this sensitivity analysis, and the recovery time is another important one. If we, you know, if the economy takes much longer to recover under the controlled case and the uncontrolled case, then that's another dimension where we can we see negative net benefits as a result.
Okay, so if so, it's a positive net benefit given your central case study of 16 months. Is that correct? But if it takes, if there's a threshold beyond that, if it takes longer than that, then perhaps we're faced with a loss. I'm just looking at the paper here. I think is it 68 months? Is that, would that be correct?
Yeah, that's right. So if what we're saying in the paper was what that analysis shows is that if with social distancing, the recovery time would take more than 68 or 69 months, then that would flip our results. Or, if the recovery time in the uncontrolled scenario, so without social distancing, would be less than 48 months, then that would flip our results as well.
Okay.
So it really depends. It's the relative rate of recovery between those two scenarios that is important.
Okay, so I suppose just to wrap up then, I imagine given the necessary speed with which you very impressively produced this piece of work, is it still a work that's ongoing, or have you any plans to develop it further, or any more progressions on what's presented at the moment?
Well, first of all, we're likely to refine these results as time goes on, so we get better estimates of the parameters, or more precise estimates of the parameters that would go into the model. So this could be a fairly alive living document, if you will, in terms of trying to understand better what social distancing does for net benefits to society. But so that's one thing. We are also working on other diseases, and so that's one reason why we could pick this up fairly quickly, because we had already been thinking about measles, and we had a project already started on other diseases. But yeah, there is a ton of questions that this generates, of course, and hopefully, a lot of economists are going to look into what the economic impact is, from social distancing, and benefits and costs to the pandemics. And there are a few other studies out there as well, that look at either the benefit side or the GDP impact from pandemics. So that is also, really helpful.
Thank you very much for taking the time to speak. It's a very interesting piece of work and a very important piece of work. So it's hopefully it'll get the attention it deserves. So thank you. Thank you both very much for speaking with me today.
Well, thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
So my thanks to Linda and Stephen for agreeing to come on the podcast at short notice. I hope you have enjoyed the first week of this new series. If you haven't already done so, please make sure to check out my conversation with Michael McMahon. He has an excellent account of the general macroeconomic response to COVID-19. Alongside that, please like and subscribe on your podcast app. A review on iTunes is like gold dust. It helps us climb up the ranks and get noticed by other people. So if you're listening on an iPhone, just scroll down, hit a 5 stars, and if you get time, write a short review. It really makes a huge difference. So hope you've been enjoying the new episode so far. I have some very interesting topics lined up for the next few weeks, and looking forward to that and speaking to you next week.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more.
And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.